What's up, Noel Nation? I am being joined here by Dave from the Alabama Football Podcast to give you an inside look here at game one for Florida State against Alabama. Huge week one matchup for Florida State. And we figure, you know, we're going to preview this game on our channel, on our court and everything, but why not go out and get an insider look, one of the experts on the Tide. And man, we are extremely excited and grateful to have you here, Dave. Man, before we jump into this thing, how are you? And man, thanks for joining me.
Jesse, I'm great, and I'm certainly happy to be on with you and your listeners. And goodness, I'm just looking forward to college football season. It seems to go by so fast every year, and the offseason is just so long. It's almost cliched to say that anymore, but it's true. And week zero sort of got the blood flowing, and certainly looking forward to a full holiday weekend of football. Certainly from our perspectives, centered around our matchup down in Doak.
Yeah, I don't know that there's been a longer offseason in the history of college football for us Florida State fans, as really, I think, man, more than anything, I just want to bury last season, right? And I don't know after that year that jumping headfirst into the 2025 season against Alabama was maybe the best choice, but here we are. And so I'm excited about this matchup. So, man, let's dive right into it. The first thing I want to do is I want to take a quick look back at 2024, because obviously year one under Kalen DeBoer is big because, you know, it's like when we had to replace Bobby, right? You're replacing a legend, and good luck following that type of guy. And I know that when you look back to last year, it wasn't necessarily up to the standards that Alabama fans hold for that program. But at the same time, it was year one under a new coach. And so anytime you have that, there's going to be some adjustment between the players and the coaches and things like that. So when we look back to year one under DeBoer, some good, some bad, but they say programs take their biggest jump from year one to year two. Give me some overall thoughts on that season as a whole. And were there some positives that you saw that make you feel confident they can take that step in year two? Or did you see any red flags that were raised in the way things played out? Or was it basically just all Jalen Milroe's fault?
Wow, there's a lot. You know, I think there's always the benefit of hindsight, you know, being 2020. And there are a lot of optimism that went into, you know, hey, Caleb's never coached at a team this talented, is what, you know, has been left at Saban. And the NCAA and in the portal sort of took advantage, put us in the stocks a little bit, can't fight back, but the people can poach our roster. But still a lot of talent. And gosh, this is an offensive-minded coach and coordinator and approach and system. Goodness, you know, and in the week, the game against Georgia didn't do anything to you know, calm our expectations. And then, you know, all of a sudden the next week did. I think when you look back and the benefit of hindsight, the transition from Saban to DeBoer is, I would say, one of the more rare transitions that you see in college football. Normally, when one coach leaves, he's been shown the door, right? And the new coach comes in with something of, you know, a mandate to run the program as they see fit, to make the changes as they see fit. And then without maybe the portal, you know, stripping away a lot of players, if players don't like it and they want to leave, when then, you know, that's okay. But when you replace and it's happened at different times. You mentioned Bowden, you know, when a star coach, a headline coach, seemingly at or near the top of their game, when they walk out, then the new coach, there's an unintentional eggshell situation. And again, it's easier to say this from hindsight. I did not predict, but there was a little bit of a political football, maybe a little bit with Milroe, maybe a little bit of, hey, there was the first avalanche of players that left, and so maybe we tread lightly because we don't want that second wave of players to go out. And sometimes you have to read the locker room and make personnel decisions based on the locker room, and if you lose a battle to win a war kind of type situation. Mm-hmm. And so I think there was a little bit of that that happened last year. I've sort of, my position has been Milroe didn't win the job, but he claimed it and then sort of rallied support around it. It's almost like a little bit of a political situation, but definitely, you know, there were highlights in the season, there are lowlights over the course of the season. But that season's gone. That season's sort of washed under. And when we project out to this next season, there's been a number of of really good things that have happened within the program. Ryan Grubb came over. This is our third attempt to get him as offensive coordinator at Alabama. And so he's here. We feel like he's home in our way. And then when we went through the sort of the spring portal season, no one left. No one left Alabama. And there's been talk, you know, the players that want to be here, our strength and coordinator, sometimes the strength and coordinator coach, sometimes you got to read between the lines, and sometimes they put it pretty close, not hard to interpret. Yeah. He said, look, the guys that want to be here, they want to be here. They've put in the work. Yeah. It's been a hard off season. If they're still here, it's because they want to be here. And so I have a lot of excitement about that. The players, I think they're unified in a way they haven't. I like Grubb. I like what he's going to bring to the offense. And then just DeBoer, I think he's going to run his program as opposed to that just that transition season that I think we'll always look back to as a little weird.
Yeah, I'm sure he probably feels a little more comfortable now with the players that he has. The players probably feel more comfortable with him. And I think you make a great point. I mean, that's the same thing we're running into right now. Like, if you join this program after the season that we had, you got to want to be a part of this. And that's a big part of it, right? You need to have everybody pulling in the same direction. And sometimes when you change coaches, you know, you get that wasn't my coach type of thing. And so that's interesting to hear. So I actually want to ask you about Ryan Grubb, but I think before we do that, let me go big picture as we turn our focus to 2025 here. Knowing the things that you just talked about and knowing some of the things that we're going to get into on both the offense and defense side of the ball, what are your realistic expectations for Alabama in 2025? Because there are some new things, right? Obviously, you got new quarterback and all that, but you also have, I think it's the second highest blue chip ratio in the country, and you're tied for top five in returning starters. So I've seen a lot of national championship expectations for the Crimson Tide this year, but tell me where you're at with this season.
Yeah, I think this era of the playoffs, I think it's two different seasons. And so I'm not going to project a whole season out.
Right.
You know, when you start talking about national titles, now it's that's seemingly a whole different thing. I think the potential exists for this to be a 10-2 season in making the playoffs. And so that's probably as far as I project. I might add to that I want us, you know, not to lose in the first round. Let's make a little bit of a run in the playoffs. But yeah, I expect Alabama to a 10-2 season. 10-2 would have gotten us there last year. Yeah. But I think this is going to be a stronger 10-2, 9-3 last year, a stronger 10-2 this season, and with an opportunity to make a run in the playoffs.
Awesome, man. Well, let's talk about that offense. And you already mentioned Ryan Grubb, and I think that's probably one of the – I know the quarterback's the big news, but I think Ryan Grubb is one of the places that you got to start when you talk about this offense. Obviously, for those that don't know, he was the offensive coordinator there with DeBoer at Washington when they made the title run, or at least a run to the playoffs there. So let me just start. Ryan Grubb effect, how big is it, and what do you expect to be the biggest change now with him at OC? Obviously, the offense is going to change with the change of quarterback as well. I know he's talked about they don't really – it was a Jalen Milroe offense, and they did what they had to last year. So things are going to look different with a more pass-heavy quarterback. But how big is it for you guys to get Ryan Grubb? And then what's the biggest change you think you're going to see with him at OC?
Yeah, I think it's a huge get. And I'm not mad at Nick Sheridan. I'm glad that he's still on the staff. He's the quarterback coach. I think that speaks highly – to what he brings to the mix. But in terms of just being the guy that's going to, you know, raise the right amount of hell when it needs to be raised to motivate the team and such, I think that's something that Grubb uniquely brings to the situation. With, you know, speaking with some fans, sometimes players just need to be gotten onto. And that's not because we don't like the players. It's just, hey, it's a tough sport. It's a tough game.
Yeah.
And sometimes it takes a tough attitude, to motivate. And maybe DeBoer isn't always the best at that. Maybe certainly last year he was not doing that. Ryan Grubb is just going to come in and he's going to tell people what they need to do. And he's going to love on them and he's going to coach them up. But he's going to tell people what they need to do in the way that situationally they might need to hear it. And so I think that's a little bit of what Grubb's going to bring to the equation. He does not mince words when he talks about his offense. He says it's aggressive and we're going to be aggressive. So I expect to see that. Does that always mean, you know, five wides and throwing the ball over the field? No, it doesn't. It's going to be a mix of run and pass, probably 60-40 pass. Yeah. But I think it's going to be aggressive. And it's going to be a lot of, you know, schemes and concepts and scheming someone open, looking for matchups, a little bit of motion to, you know, get the defense to sort of give up its position last year or, you know, pre-snap. And when I do think about last year, I think there was a significant disadvantage, and I hate to throw everything at Milroe's feet, and that's not really what I'm doing, but it was a Milroe offense, his style of play. And so a lot of offensive coordinators struggled. You know, Tommy Rees, his first year, it took half the season before Saban's last year, Tommy Rees, before he started pulling it together. And it took Nick Sheridan a few weeks to sort of pull it together, because it's just so oblong to how most quarterbacks, most offensive coordinators approach the game. And I think Simpson, you know, we can talk about him. I think he elevates the floor because it's going to be more of a traditional play, and the more traditional type of scheming that you might see from an offense, I think the Alabama squad will be able to deliver that this season.
Yeah, and that's the next place I want to go. And when you talk about Jalen Milroe, as you said, man, it's just a different type of quarterback, and it's kind of like, well, if it's the best thing you got in the tool shed, then you're going to use it at the time, right? But it's maybe not the what they wanted out of their quarterback position. And when I look at Milroe, I understand the passing wasn't really there, but when he leads you in rushing yards and passing, and he had 36 touchdowns, I think 20 rushing touchdowns last year, which is about half of Alabama's touchdowns, you know, I guess it's one of them. It's a two-part question, right? Can Ty Simpson elevate the passing to – I know he's a mobile guy, and we'll talk about that in a second, but, like, can he be the guy to make up for the running with his just elevated passing over what Jalen Milroe did, right? Because – you know, can he throw for that many touchdowns, you know, when you take out the running aspect? So it's going to be interesting to see, because that ground game is, it just changes things, right? That's what we're looking at with Tommy Castellanos this year, is probably a primary running quarterback. But I do want to talk here about Ty Simpson. Takes over at quarterback here, fourth year junior. So the interesting thing with Ty Simpson, he's not a young guy. He's been around the program for 4 years. He's just not played a lot. And, you know, we've done our scouting for this game already, and I've looked it up. He's never really played meaningful minutes. Most of the Power Four games that he came into were already blowouts. He's kind of really, really played most against FCS or G5 competition there. So give me your thoughts on him and what he brings to the offense. And then the other thing I kind of want to ask you about here is, when you talk about him, how concerned are you with that inexperience going into making his first start on the road in a sold out stadium in Tallahassee? And I don't know if you knew this. I saw a stat where I think he's going to be the first Alabama quarterback to make his first start on the road in 21 years.
Yeah. It's been a while. It'd take me a minute to think of who that was, but
I think they said in 04 or something like that was the last guy.
Yeah. So I think, that was probably at Georgia, and name escapes me, but I think I know exactly what you're talking about there. That was a rough day that day. I don't want to gloss over, Simpson's lack of experience. If he comes out and sort of, you know, wets down his leg, then it's going to be a long day. I think he's got more poise to him about that. I think he just wasn't ready. I think Saban wanted him to start 2 years ago, and he just wasn't ready. And Milroe in the 23 season effectively won the job by not playing that day in South Florida. And last year, I don't think it was an open competition. And so we could look at those in circumstances you're dismissing, and maybe there's truth there. Ty Simpson's former five-star. His dad's a college coach. We've got the wide receiver transfer, Isaiah Horton from Miami, who's from the Murfreesboro, Tennessee area, and played 7-on-7 camps with Ty Simpson. And he's on record, Horton is on record saying, I came to Alabama to get to play with Ty. And so I think that people see things in Ty, and in the footage of Ty in practice, albeit it's limited. Boy, he looks really sharp. All the coaches dating back to spring practice have all said, you know, he looks like the guy. Now, they didn't name, you know, they would sort of equivocate, if we had to play today, he would be the guy. And then sort of continue that up until camp and said, this is the guy. All the interviews, he was voted team captain. All the things that we can look at from the distance and say, yeah, he's ready. I think Ty Simpson's ready. Now, let's see how he does on the road. Like you said, I think that's going to be a critical factor. And then you had mentioned, you know, can Ty Simpson make up for all of the offense that Milroe had? And I think I have two answers for that. on one hand, I say, yeah, I think that he can, and we can talk about the passing game. I think we're raising the floor in the passing game. We're going to be able to read, second receiver, third receiver. We're going to have more of a natural progression, which allows you to scheme things. We're going to show something one series and maybe come back and do a wrinkle off of that, and the quarterback can execute against that. And so I think there's all of that. And there's the other sort of overlooked piece of it that says, well, who's going to pick up all of these rushing yards? It's going to be the running backs. Mm-hmm. The running backs are going to get a lot more carries, a lot more opportunities, and I think the offensive line is going to be better. But I think the running backs are going to get a lot more sort of traditional carries. When you have a defense crowding the line because we don't think the quarterback can throw, well, that hurts right. The quarterback running, and it hurts the running backs. If you have, even if it's just a system, limited mobility, pocket passing quarterback, but they can hit the open receivers, then that's going to open up some of the running lanes. You mentioned Ty's mobility. He is surprisingly mobile. I will say that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because that's our biggest question with Tommy Castellanos this year. You know, his legs are there, but does he have the arm to back that defense off? Like you said, because if he doesn't, then none of this works. And so I definitely get the more balanced attack. And I have watched some film on Ty Simpson, and he is, you know, he might not be Jalen Milroe running, but he's hard to get down. I mean, he's a strong kid, and he runs well. I know Ryan Grubb said they're probably not going to run him a lot because he's more valuable upright as a passer. But like you said, man, he'll be part of the run game, which actually transitions well into the next question that I wanted to ask you. Talking about the running backs, how big is the loss of Jam Miller for this game? Because I know DeBoer said that, or it might have been Ryan Grubb that said, look, I understand he is at another level than the other backs right now. Now, that's not to say that the other guys aren't experienced or talented. They just don't have a lot of experience. Yeah. And so it's kind of a two-part question, right? One is, how big is it a loss from Jam Miller from just being your top back? But also, how much do you think that hurts from now an inexperienced quarterback making his first start on the road without his senior running back next to him helping with protections and things like that?
Yeah, and I think the second is probably the bigger factor than the first.
Yeah.
I think there's talent there running the ball, and so if we just look at carries from a carries perspective, I think we can spread that mayonnaise and that we can be okay. But it's the protections, it's the blocking. It's just a highlight that they were talking about Jam and his contribution just across this topic, and there was a highlight one of Milroe's runs. Against Georgia last year in the game. And it was just a soul snatching, crushing block that Jam laid on a guy that bought the edge. And you think not many running backs want to do that. And those that even want to, not many can do that. And so I think that's going to be, I don't want to say significant, but I think there's materiality to that loss. I do like sort of the stable of running backs, and it's going to be interesting. I think, you know, you think, well, you know, first team, second team, third team, and then you just next guy up. But I think with what we lose, with what Alabama loses in Jam on the plays, but not the carries, right? So the blocking, I think that may dictate a little bit of shuffling. And we have a transfer. Alabama has a transfer running back from Louisiana. He was a starter there for 2 years. Dre Washington. He's a little shorter. He's 5'9". He's pretty stout. Goes about, you know, 215, whatever it is. But his experience, and I think he's a solid, stable, move the chains runner. I think he can eat snaps, those kinds of things as a runner. His experience, I think, is going to add a lot in terms of the protections. And so I maybe from a pure carry situation, maybe had him third, fourth. I think he moves up first or second in terms of the number of snaps that he gets. Simply from a protection standpoint. And I think that's something that it's not going to be as comfortable maybe that Ty would have with Jam, because they've been on the team together for years and all of the practices, right? And so Dre Lynn coming in, he's just had fall camp. But I think Ty's going to get there and get comfortable with that. But that's going to be an interesting thing to watch.
Yeah.
When Alabama's not running the ball, what does the blocking look like? Do we play another tight end? Do we play more 13 personnel?
Yeah.
For the sake of that, do we do empty backfields with three tight ends? And so that's going to be some interesting personnel groupings that we might see as a result, not for the sake of the running, but for the sake of the blocking.
I think you hit the nail on, because that's really one of the things I think that is kind of undersold about that, right? Is just the experience of having that guy back there. And, you know, I did see the picture of him in spring camp, and like, I hope he has a very fast recovery, but that dude is massive. So I'm not mad about being after this game, but yeah, I think it's interesting, the experience sometimes, right? When you got a new quarterback back there and now he's got a new running back too, you just hope you can get everything lined up and your calls made correctly. Luckily you guys have a great center, but we'll talk about him in a second. Yeah. But man, the clear and obvious strength on this offense has to be the receiving core. I mean, you got Ryan Williams, breakout freshman. I said this on our preview the other day, as much as Ryan Williams is the explosive guy that everyone talks about, I think Jeremy Bernard might be the guy that's kind of that more consistent workhorse that I'm a little bit more scared of, because his was a little less hot or not. It was more consistent production throughout the year. Then you add in Isaiah Horton on top of that. This is really a trifecta, obviously one of the top five, top three receiver rooms in the country. So give me your thought on that group. And knowing that that is the overwhelming strength of the offense, but you have a new quarterback, do you think they're going to be willing to let Ty Simpson throw it 30, 35 times in this game to take advantage of that receiver group?
I think if that's what's needed, I don't think the game plan is going to be, we have to throw it, you know, 30, 35 times. Now you wake up sometimes, you know, in the third quarter and realize that's what's required. But I don't think that's going to be, you know, necessarily the game plan. I really like those three receivers, and I like the next three that would come up after that. I think there's a lot of depth I see in this wide receiver class, and you know, sort of room. And I look at someone like, you know, you mentioned Bernard. I think he might be the biggest single beneficiary of a quarterback like Simpson that can read the progressions. When the second read is always to run, then that frustrates the receivers, right? Either I'm the number one guy and I'm going to have to fight for a contested ball, or I'm not going to get a shot. And when you have the second and third receivers and the progressions and the reads, and they're getting balls when they're open, they're getting the ball thrown to them when they're open, I think that's going to be motivating to the wide receiver core. And I think Ty Simpson's the type of quarterback. He doesn't have to go out there and be the Heisman winner. He just needs to raise the floor and be what you might consider just a competent college quarterback. Now, I think he has a chance to be more than that, but if he can just be a competent level college quarterback that knows how, you know, maybe can't always get to the third read, but can get to the 2.5 read, right? I think that elevates the play and stabilizes the floor. I think he can be a little bit better than that. But if Alabama can get that type of performance, not a good Milrow, bad Milrow, how's the day going to be, but a quarterback that consistently can at least get to the second read, and we can scheme around that. The coaches can scheme around that type of floor. That's what I expect from the receiver core in Simpson this year.
That's an interesting point maybe I hadn't thought of with this group, is like, now that you have a guy who can get past that first read, you can use those weapons a little more efficiently throughout your offense. And, you know, again, I mean, that's something that it's my biggest concern really, is that can we stop all three? It's like, okay, you got one good guy, maybe two, you can double up on them, but three, it's kind of a pick your poison. And you know, we talk about on our show all the time that it's a little bit easier sometimes for a good receiving core to make an average quarterback look great than it is, you know, a great quarterback to make an average receiving core look great. Yeah. And so I think if you're going to start a brand new quarterback, you couldn't pair him with a better receiving group. But it all starts up front with the offensive line. So I want to talk about there to round out the offensive talk here. And, man, up front, there's a ton of talent. I've heard a lot about this offensive line and how good they should be this year. You also do have some new starters. And one thing that I did kind of want to mention here is it does sound like you guys might be down a starter there. The Jaden Roberts kid, I read that he has not participated in any group drills or team drills throughout camp so far. So I don't know if he's going to be ready to go for this game. So I say all that to say, this is a uber talented group. I mean, you obviously got your left tackle, your center, and I think it's your right guard are some of the best in the country there. But there's some new pieces and there's been some shuffling. And then some of the numbers last year, I know we're kind of middle of the road with the offensive line group, with some of the run stats and some of the pass protection stats. So what do you expect out of this group this year?
Yeah, I'm excited about the offensive line. Again, I hate to throw stuff at Milrow. I think when you have such a dynamically different play style, it manifests itself in a lot of different ways. And offensive line, I think, is one way. When you don't know where the quarterback's going to be, he's hard to block for.
Yeah.
When you have a quarterback that is disproportionately subject impacted by pressure, every quarterback's impacted by pressure. Some handle it better than others. Milro handled it very poorly. Well, that motivates pressure. Let's scheme him from everywhere, attack him from everywhere. His linemen don't know where he's going to be, and he's going to flail and struggle. And we saw well too much of that last season. I think there's going to be again sort of slow raising the floor. Then I think that adds stability to everything, and I think including the offensive line. You know, Caden Proctor, most of his career has been injured. Knock on wood, word out of camp is that he's as healthy as he's been. He's dropped some weight. He's looking really, really good. Left guard Cam Dewberry is a transfer from Texas A&M. Look, he's not going to be Tyler Booker. There's not going to be, you know, necessarily another Tyler Booker, but Cam Dewberry has participated very, very well in the offseason program, dropped about 15 pounds, looks more athletic than he did coming out of A&M. I think he's going to be serviceable. Everyone, you know, Parker Brailsford, I think, is probably the best lineman we have. You know, you mentioned Jaden Robertson, and when he's right, he's right. 2 years ago, entered the season as the third team right guard, and we had injuries, and he basically Wally pipped two guys at the position. And the only thing that sort of hurt him is injury. And he had an injury last year where he wouldn't practice during the week, but then he was on a snap count, and everyone said he could play until the pain, and then he would play about half the games or about half of the game. And so he's a tough joker. And so I think he's probably practiced a little bit more than that, but he has missed some time. I still have him marked as the starter, but if he does sort of platoon at the position, it'll be Gino Vandermark, and I'm pleased with how he's come along, and I think he's going to be even better this year than last year. He's a Michigan State 2 years ago, Michigan State transfer, and he came with the new coaching staff. Chris Kapelvik, the offensive line coach, was at Michigan State, went to Baylor for about 15 minutes and came to Alabama and brought Gino with him. And so there's a sort of legacy relationship there. And Gino, man, he's versatile. I think he's played four positions last season while he's at Alabama. If he has to step in and split time or just man the right guard position, I'm confident that he can do it.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing is we know from experience that last year it all starts up front. And so, yeah. I mean, you got it. This is where it's at. And so, yeah, it's interesting to hear, man, about that offensive line because I've heard a lot of good stuff. And so with a young quarterback, you're going to need it, obviously. Yeah. And you're down, you're starting running back. So that'll be one of the biggest tests for us is can we get penetration on that offensive line. But let's flip over to the defense here because, man, there's some questions with that Bama offense, right? There's a lot of good, but there's a lot of new. And so there's some questions that come with that. But what really concerns me when I look at this game from a Florida State perspective is this defense. And a lot of that is because they were good last year. I mean, it was a very productive defense. But it also – there doesn't appear to be a weakness in this defense at any one of the three levels. And I guess my question for you is that true? I've heard the linebackers took a big step in this offseason. The defensive line, I've heard, is good, but maybe there's some depth concerns once you get past the ones. And then the secondary, they were one of the best units in the country last year, and bring back, I think, four or five starters. So am I right by saying there doesn't appear to be necessarily a weakness with this group? And then is there, if I'm wrong about that, what position would you say is maybe the strength and the weakness?
Yeah, I am really high on this defense. The pattern that I've observed just over college football, just over the years, when a defensive coordinator comes in and changes the scheme, Saban ran the same scheme, different defensive coordinators. And so you didn't see the same sort of drop off, but when it's a different scheme, it's always year two, or seemingly it's always year two when it clicks, right? Let's learn the fundamentals, learn it. And then next year, you don't have to think about it. You just play it at speed. And so this will be year two in the Kane Womack system. Last year, there were times where the players really just executed and played very well. There were times where we had lapses, and there's a lot of maybe reasons for that. But I'm excited about this defense. I'm always going to say my mentality is always I want one more defensive lineman.
Same here.
So I think we could certainly benefit by it, but most teams could. I like our front three. I like most of sort of the next three. And then there's some depth in there. So I think we're going to manufacture some depth rotating a lot of guys. One thing that was very evident with this coaching staff last year is they'll rotate. Saban would play with a very short bench. And this team seems to be comfortable playing with a much deeper bench. And I like sort of their mindset. They say there's only so many snaps to go around. And so if players earn them, then they'll have a chance at them. And then that keeps everyone fresh longer. And so so I'm excited about that. I like some of the emerging talent across the defensive front. So that'll be interesting to see. I don't want to say lucky, but and Alabama had some good fortune at the linebacker position. You know, Deontay Lawson hurt his knee late last season, and they were still thought that he would go pro. Well, he came back. And then Justin Jefferson, the other inside middle linebacker, he benefits sort of by the Diego Pavia rule. He had run out by conventional
method. Okay, yeah.
He had run out of eligibility. But when you start saying, well, we're not going to count the JUCO year against him, then last December he learned that he was going to get to stick around for another year. And so we thought our two inside linebackers, we could lose both of them. We got both of them back, and then we have a transfer in from Colorado that, you know, all word in camp is that he's really lit it up. So we're deep at a position where we thought we might be especially thin. And so I'm super excited about that. And in the secondary, I almost don't have words for the secondary. After the 23 season, Alabama, due to portal and just running out of eligibility, going to pro early, Alabama lost 9 defensive backs, which is
that's tough, insane. Yeah.
And so last year, it was really thin at DB a couple of times. And now this year, I feel good about the 2-deep all the way across the board. This might be as deep of a secondary of guys that can play as I've seen. And certainly the 2-year sort of recovery at the position is outstanding. I think this might be the strength of the team in addition to just simply the strength of the defense. It is really an impressive unit.
I don't know that I love hearing that, but but at least thankfully with Gus Malzahn, we're run heavy,
yeah.
A little bit more of a 60-40 run heavy offense there. So, you know, man, I guess with that, like with this defense, if you were Florida State's offensive coordinator, where would you probably try and attack them? Because it doesn't sound like you really want to throw the ball. I know they're looking for better sack numbers out of that defensive line this year a little bit. But, man, I mean, where would you go if you were trying to attack that Alabama defense, knowing that there's really not a weakness you can point at?
Yeah, I mean, I would attempt to attack the run, and I would try to see, hey, how deep really are they? A lot of, you know, names up front, but if we can get into some rotations, does that create some opportunity? You know, I'd attack the edges, a little bit of misdirection. Let's run them around. Let's make them run. It's gonna be hot, and let's get these big guys worn out. One thing that Saban used to say, and I thought, man, there's a cleverness to that. He said, you know, he'd say, you know, when you practice, you have to be careful how hard you practice the big guys. When the big guys run out of gas, they're out of gas.
Yeah.
When the little guys run out of gas, just give them a few minutes and they're ready to go again. Yeah. But the big boys, we'll see you tomorrow. And so I think I would approach a game attacking this front. I'd approach them something like that. Let's see if we can attack the edges. Let's see if we can stretch them out. If that's some screens, if that's some end arounds, if that's some tosses, you know, whatever it would be, you know, some RPOs. Let's try to catch someone and sort of option on them. I think I'd attack them that way. And unfortunately for Alabama, that's what Gus does, right? And
I was so just about to say, my listeners will be happy to hear that. That's a Gus Malzahn offense in a nutshell.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then, you know, and you do that, and that's going to drop, you know, it's football, right? It's going to drop the safeties, and then you take your shot. And yeah, that's what Gus does. So, it could be in that regard, it could just be a long game. And
Yeah, so the last personnel question I got for you here is, this is really the same for us. So this is an equal opportunity weakness here, is all new specialists this season. And it's the same for us. We replace a really good kicker and a really good punter and our long snapper. And so I know that's the same with you guys this year. So just give me some thoughts on that group, because I know, you know, if something turns out to be a close game, this could be the difference. And so just give me some thoughts on what you've heard from the specialist group this year.
Yeah, boy, I tell you, they could be special in the short bus kind of way. I think we just need this group not to cost us a game. You know, we have some transfers in. We have a transfer punter, and you know, he led D2, but you know, that's D2. And so when you get your punter from Colorado School of Mines, then you know, you hope he's good. But and he led D2, you know, 46 yard average, which isn't outstanding, but boy, you know, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Don't lose us a game, but if you can average above 42, I'll keep my mouth shut. The field goal kicker, not really good news coming out of camp. They struggled. I think in a recent scrimmage, he missed what should have been, traditionally speaking, an easy kick. And so we need to get some work done there. You know, we do have obviously we all have backups, but the backups are young and even have even less experience. It is a new, you know, long snapper is new, and he's a transfer from Cal. And so, you know, SEC in the South, you know, the heat.
Yeah.
How's he going to do those types of situations? Not predicting anything bad, but you know, goodness, it's a question we've not had in a while. And so I hate these types of questions. And the holder is going to be a punter. I think Ty Simpson has been the holder for several years. And so he's not leaving the team, but he can't, you know, don't want to roll him out there in that position. So, it's going to be interesting. I really want to see a little bit out of just frustration. I don't want to say spite, that's too strong of a word, but out of frustration, I want to see Jalen Mbakwe. He was a true freshman last year at the cornerback position, number two cornerback. And man, he had a future for him, for himself in the secondary. And he moved over to wide receiver, and he's probably in the top 10 at wide receiver. And so limited playing time. And boy, if he doesn't field every kick on special teams, then I'm going to be a little bit frustrated with his, you know, his decision. But he's got a lot of talent. I'm not mad at the kid, but doggone. I hope he does very well in the special teams. I think that can really help us out. We need teams not to lose us a game. And if we can just have a serviceable floor at the position, then okay, we'll handle business. But you can get sideways really quick with those units.
And that's why I asked, because we're in the same boat. You know, we're replacing two good kickers, and now we're the same way. We also heard some not so great stuff about the kicker coming out of camp, and they've challenged him. And you know, usually when they say they've challenged him, that means he wasn't doing very good. And and we also have a guy with some track speed at returner, so hopefully he can get some opportunities. So, Dave, let's wrap this one up, man. I appreciate you being on here, but let's wrap this up. So, just a couple more questions here. Bama wins if, and I'll let you just give your thoughts on. How does Bama win? Bama wins if this happens.
Yeah, I think we've got to take care of the ball. Not go out there and get first game jitters. There's going to be frustrating plays, frustrating moments. There's new starters at positions. Maybe we've shaken some things up due to injury. Just go out there and play our game. It's going to be the heat of the day on a Saturday. Just don't let external circumstances play a role. If the offense goes three and out, that's not an indictment on Ty Simpson. He can't play the position. Let's just go back, regroup. It's football. It's going to be a long day. And it's going to be, you know, a long season. And so let's just go out there and revert to our training and play to the level of our training and let external factors, scoreboards and all that take care of itself. If we do what we're supposed to do on day one, then, I think that bodes well for the Tide.
Gotcha. And so I'm not going to ask you to make a pick, because most of us YouTubers, we like to, you know, our podcasters, we like to save it for our show. So I want to ask you to get the sauce right here, but maybe a confidence ranking, right? And I will say this on our show, it's hard to even predict because there's so much change with our team and stuff like that. So maybe a confidence rating and how we did this on our show, if you want to follow the same format. So five is pretty much like a coin flip game. One is we're probably going to get spanked. 10 is we're probably going to deliver a spanking. On a scale of 1 to 10, where's your confidence level that Alabama comes out of Saturday's game with a win?
Yeah, I'm probably 7.5. I do have a lot of confidence in this team, just not just against Florida State, but for the season. I think this is going to be. I think this stacks up as a pretty good season, you know, for Alabama. I think that I think it's good. You guys are a high quality opponent. You know, last year notwithstanding playing at your position. I think maybe your quarterback gave us some extra motivation to run some sprints in the heat, you know, of July and August. But hey, it's, you know, that's all right. That's kind of the way that it works. I like the way I like the narrative, if I can use that word. I like the storyline of this team, independent of who we're playing this year. So it's not it's not a projection onto you guys. I just really like all the positive storylines and news that I'm hearing about this Alabama team, and with that I have a high degree of confidence that they're going to come out and pull it together and demonstrate it on the field, and then we just happen to face you guys week one.
Yeah, and I really feel like in this game, all signs point to Alabama should win this game. And I think from a Florida State perspective, I can see a path to an upset. Maybe you get, some inexperience at quarterback. Maybe Thomas Castellanos breaks off a couple runs or something like that. That's your path there. But I understand, even as a Florida State guy, that, you got the talent edge on paper. You're coming from a little bit better spot. And so I know it's going to be an uphill climb for us. And so with that, man, obviously you're going to probably have Bama winning in that one with a 7.5 rating. Do you think they cover? Do you think Florida State's – the spread is currently 13.5. Do you think Florida State at least keeps it close enough to cover, or do you think it's going to maybe get away from them late?
I think Alabama covers.
Yeah.
I don't know. I won't go so far as to get away and all of that, but I think Alabama covers.
That's fair. That is fair, man. Well, that's going to do it for this preview, guys. We really appreciate Dave coming on and giving us an inside the tide look at Alabama. This game coming up Saturday at 3:30 on ABC. You guys know we're going to have all kinds of coverage leading up to and after the game. I'm going to be there, Dave. I can't wait. I'm excited to see it. Hopefully, I'm excited after the game. We'll see. I don't know, man, but I can't thank you enough for coming on and giving us a look. Tell the people, if they're interested in some more Alabama content, where they can find you. What's the best place?
Yeah, we're Alabama Football Podcast. We do have a .com, and I'd say wherever you get your podcast. iTunes, that's where I go, but all the podcast stores have them. And we're on Facebook, Twitter, and the web as well. But reach out. Hey, send us a message. I love interacting with fans, right? And all of this is fun. All of this is for fun. Give me some smack talk. If we don't deliver, if I've missed on something, then let me hear about it, because that's the fun of college football.
I love it, man. That's how it is here. Like, we're by the fans for the fans, and smack talk's what makes it fun. So
absolutely.
But yeah, man, I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to Saturday. Hopefully it's a good game, and man, we'll catch you guys on the other side. Dave, thanks again, man. I appreciate
it. Absolutely. So much. Thanks for having us.
Yes, sir. You guys take care, and we'll catch you on the next one.